Welcome to Man Reads Monday. I am Aaron Ventura. He is Jacob Rush. Let's get to work. Jacob, what are we working through today?
Today we are back in durable trades. I forget the subtitle. Sorry.
Family-centered economies that have stood the test of time.
There we go. Not about stonks or stocks, but about trades. And we are in trades 6 through 10.
Yeah.
So we're just chunking our way through. I think there are 60.
I think 61
trades, yeah. In the very confusingly numbered chapters. So we'll hit 6 through 10 today, and yeah, shouldn't actually be too tough. We'll just kind of peg through it.
So the five we're covering are carpenter, painter, cook, brewer, and innkeeper. And you'll notice, if you read the first five before these, food, fiber, and shelter. He said we're going to be the dominant durable trades, and here that's basically what you see. So carpenter and painter are things you need for shelter. Cook, it's food. Mm-hmm. Brewer, it's drink. And innkeeper, once again, housing. So
yeah,
we're staying pretty close to home, mm-hmm. you could say, on each of these. So let's start with carpenter, and start with what's the distinction between this one and the woodworker?
Right. So remember when we talked about woodworking, kind of dialed into more particular, almost like craftsmanship furniture, like cabinets. Yep. So cabinet making was a big subsection of woodworking, whereas carpenter is more broad,
yeah.
Right?
You're framing a house.
Yeah, yeah. He even says at the beginning, you know, carpentry, the building of structures from wood. Yep. And there's there's the quote from Genesis at the bottom, Noah building the ark. Noah was, you know, an ancient carpenter.
Yeah.
So it's a very biblical trade, if you think about it.
What I really liked about this is, this is the lowest barrier to entry trade there is. So all it really requires is tools, and even there, depending on who you're working for, they may even provide some of the basic tools. Mm. And so over the weekend, I actually got to have lunch on Sunday with Daniel Anderson from Anderson Family Construction. Mm. So I thought, oh, this is great, as I'm reading this book. And I found a lot of what Rory says in this book to be true in our Moscow market, perhaps in even a more pronounced way. So one of the things I asked Daniel was, I asked him, so like, who are your guys' competitors? Because he says in here, many carpenters cannot keep up with demand in their own city. And so I was wondering, just, you know, what, like, if I were to need to build a home, you know, we're talking new construction here, what are my options even? And apparently they do the majority, or I think they have the most in terms of quantity, new builds per year, and that's 8. So
they're booked out.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so I asked him also, like, how far are they booked out? And I think he said 12 to 18 months or something like that.
Yeah.
And he also said, basically, there isn't any competition. So they're not bidding necessarily with, you know, it's not like there's all these construction companies that are bidding to build your new home. It's typically individual, the consumers or the developer that approaches them, and then it's just a matter of doing it.
How much you need.
I think this is one of those places where if you are really good at what you do, you don't even have to really do much marketing.
Yeah.
Like, they're not on any of the lists, or I don't even know what the white pages equivalent is. I need to build a new home in Moscow. Where do I go? But I don't even think they probably have to do much marketing when you're booked out that far in advance. So
yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the interesting things talks about family centeredness, and it actually scores kind of lower, 62%, which may not be kind of immediately, you would think, oh, wood, you know, you're working with wood. Well, he brings up to the point where unless you're just building your own home,
yeah,
you're typically working offsite. You hear about construction workers, the job site, working long hours because the house got to get built.
Yeah.
You got to have a roof.
Yep.
And that can be pretty demanding, pretty strenuous. And so so you think about maybe some of the meta skills involved, which would be family friendly, teaching your son how to work with a hammer or, you know, with a drill, kind of having those at home projects. But in terms of the trade itself, it could potentially bring you away from your family in certain regards.
Yeah, for sure. They actually recently moved quite a bit out of town, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just talking to him about, so he's actually the one managing the company. So he's not actually building it. His brother is doing a lot of the actual building, yeah. but he's running a lot of the business side of things. But yeah, so they live quite about 30 minutes out of town. And so he has to drive in and then, you know, he's visiting job sites or doing this and that. One of the things that the guy suggests in here, so they have these little profiles for a lot of these trades in here.
Right.
And at the end, he says, if you're trying to get into this, work for somebody who does what you want to do for about 5 years, so the work becomes second nature, and then go into business. And I think this is probably going to be where, especially if you're a college student or a recent grad, or if you're going to forego college and just go straight into it, as opposed to spending those 4 years, say, in school, you spend 5 years on the job site,
yeah.
and you figure out what you're good at, and then you start to learn more and more skills, and then yeah. once it becomes second nature, then working on the business side of things is a whole other thing. If you want to go into business for yourself, and that's a skill
yeah.
that you may not have yet, that you may also need to figure out. It's one thing to do the building, which you need to do. Another thing to have a well-managed business, which a lot of guys don't know how to do.
Yeah. I would say two other things to maybe the college student, you know, talking about don't do for 5 years if you're not in college. I'll say, if you are in college, don't waste your college years. John Piper, don't waste your college. Like, whether it's summer internships or, you know, summer, I'm going to go fishing, right? You have some guys here who go salmon. Is it salmon fishing? Alaskan?
I don't know. Yeah, probably.
They go catch fish. I don't know what fish they are, but they get them. Like work for a construction company or work at a data firm, work at IMSI for a summer. Like, yep. don't waste your summers and sort of take it easy for 5 years and then go, oh, no, I have not actually tried to develop skills anywhere. And if you can work part-time while you're in college, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're, you know, your scholarships require you to get a 4.0 and every single bit of your time needs to be on studies, go get some work.
Yeah.
Don't waste your time. That's the thing I wish I had done sooner. I don't think I worked until my sophomore year.
Okay.
And I think I could have very easily my freshman year. So.
Yeah. Up next, the seventh trade is the painter. So we're going from, I guess, building the house to now making it look nice.
Glorifying
the house. This one was interesting because he says, despite very low barriers to entry, there's not a ton of competition. Income is strong and can be as high as $80 per hour. So this is one of those ones where he's like, it's kind of surprising for as little as you need to get started in
yeah.
this. You'd imagine there to be hyper competition, but he says, surprisingly, there's not. I don't know exactly why. I don't know. Maybe people don't want to like breathe paint or they just find other things to do. But
you need to be tall. You got to get Luke Jank.
Yeah.
He's the man for you. Get him for all your painting needs.
Yeah. So, and he says in here, becoming the go-to guy for building contractors
yeah.
can mean a steady supply of new jobs for many years. And this is very true. My mom and her partner, they sub out. They are always looking for good subs.
Yeah.
And so they have a painter that I think he lives in somewhere in Oregon, and they hired him because there was a job down in Oregon they needed to do. So they found this guy, did a really good job. And so now he's one of their go-to guys over there. So, you know, performing well on the job, becoming that person who gets it done is really key. And that's one of the keys to a successful supply of work. One of the other things I noticed in here is just, I mean, probably everyone has painted something. Maybe it wasn't good. Maybe it was bad. And I think painting is relatively easy. But this guy says something that I thought was very true, where that painting is 90% prep.
Yeah.
It's taping things off. Putting things down so you don't destroy something. And the painting itself is actually, it's really simple. It's pretty straightforward once you know how to do it.
You get those house sprayers. Like, that's like the best thing ever where you just take it, what is it called? It's like compressed air painter thing.
Yeah, I've never used one of those before.
It's rad. You just kind of stand outside a house and just
But first you got to clean. You got to make sure your surface is nice. You got to have it all taped off.
Tape it off because you don't want to paint your window.
Yeah.
That'd be bad.
So painter, I thought this is one. We have a friend who goes to CCD here that recently was thinking about, what do I want to do via work? So he just started his own painting company. One of our friends helped him get started, and now he's going.
Now he's off.
This is something that can totally be done.
Yeah.
All right. Next up.
Cook.
the chef. Cook. Don't make me talk about Chef's Table again, but you guys should all watch that show.
The Great British Baking Show. What?
Yeah, my wife watches that sometimes. Okay, tell us, what did you think of Cook? Is chef, it, caterer, or restaurateur?
Restaurateur. I just watched, so back at home, visiting Jane and her family, and one of their favorite movies is The 100-Foot Journey.
Have you seen this movie? No.
It's kind of like a Bollywood style movie.
Okay. So there's like dancing?
No. Well, I mean, no, not really.
Okay. But so I thought it's not Bollywood unless there's, you know, it's like well, maybe musical, like maybe an Indian musical, right?
Maybe I'm a racist because by Bollywood, I just meant the main character is Indian. So. Okay. And maybe edit that out. I don't know. But point is, so you had this family that's a. Basically, the son works for his family's restaurant. They move to the middle of Paris,
okay.
And they're right across the street from this like one Michelin star French restaurant. And the son, you know, is a fantastic cook, but he's only made Indian food. But he's got this aspiration to become a chef. And anyway, so it's just this really great movie, and you know, about he goes and works for the French restaurant, and there's this like family, you know, family tension because he left the home because cooking. And food is a huge part of who we are as a culture. Anyway, it's a great movie, but kind of gives you an insider of, okay, what is the life of a professional chef?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things he talks about. He talks about the income. It's like the median income for cooks and head chefs is 46 grand a year.
Yeah, it's pretty low.
So you're typically not making the big bucks, you know, if you're a head chef at your run-of-the-mill, you know, restaurant in a middle class place.
Yeah.
But if you do go to a big city, and if you are, you know, like the Dave Ramsey of your city, you work at a Michelin star restaurant, you can make up to, what does he say, $150,000 or more.
Yeah.
Now you have to ask the question, okay, what's the it's like wanting to go into the NBA. What is it? How realistic is it?
How good are you?
How tall are you? Are you realistically going to be the one that's going to be doing that?
In a pretty competitive field.
So, but pretty self-explanatory in terms of, okay, what do? They cook food.
Yeah.
Because everybody eats, he says at the beginning, not everybody cooks.
Yeah. And one of the things that is probably like connected to this is actually running or owning a restaurant.
Right.
So maybe you are a decent cook, but you're really good at running a business and you can find capital to start something and you're hiring out some of the work. Or maybe you're not cooking something that is necessarily really difficult to cook. Mm-hmm. So all you're doing is training, you know, line chefs or something. And, you know, maybe you are the head chef, but you're also the owner. But I think this is one of the things that it says, you know, they're the hardest working, lowest paid staff members.
Yeah.
And, you know, in times past, you might even have lived, you know, up above the restaurant. And some people, that is still how it is in many countries. But some statistics that I found. So one statistic is that 60% of restaurants don't survive year one and 80% are gone by year four.
Yeah.
So you think if your restaurant survives 4 years or 5 years, you are in that tiny 20% of restaurants. And we see that here in our just little town, how many restaurants have opened and closed. And I know COVID did a number on a lot of these.
Sure.
And that's one of the places where the places that are still going, I imagine, are the ones that aren't heavily leveraged with debt.
Yep.
So if you have to pay back your creditors and suddenly COVID hits or a recession hits, this is one of the first early affected places. And then the ones that make it through are the ones that have a low debt and cash flow to be able to survive. And so this is why, like, McDonald's, right? McDonald's ain't going out of business.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think that to your point, you know, it's just at the same time, you know, depending on what your market is, what is your thing, what is your niche?
Yeah.
McDonald's, fast food, it's not going out of style, even during COVID, because people are going to eat.
Especially during COVID.
People are going to be too lazy to cook. And now they've got Uber Eats, and they can bring your food to them.
Yeah.
So if you want to do that, just being smart about it, not going into a ton of debt. No, like Naren said, knowing the statistics, knowing the milestones that you actually have to cross before you can start feeling safe and secure.
Yeah, and you and I, we both worked in food service. I worked in food service for 8 years with various different chefs, and I totally understand why many poorly managed restaurants and places to eat close, because there's so many possible things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
So many possible things that go wrong. And you're working often with entry-level workforce, which is a high turnover.
Revolving door, yep.
Yeah, so it's really a challenging industry. And yeah, the barrier to entry is extremely high, at least if you're starting a restaurant. It takes, someone says, you know, starting from scratch, you'll need $150K just to cover initial expenses for the first 3 to 6 months of operation. So unless you got $150K to burn through, you probably aren't going to be able to start something on your own without significant investment.
Mm.
Okay, let's talk about one of these cooler of the trades.
All in vogue these days, right?
Yeah.
You know a cousin.
The brewer, the master brewer, the winemaker, or the distiller. So what did you think of the brewer?
I just like this Epic of Gilgamesh quote really quick. Sorry. Eat the food, Enkidu. It is the way one lives. Drink the beer, as is the custom of the land.
Yeah.
So even going to the scriptures, strong drink, beer, alcohol, wine has been around for as long as man has been around.
Yep.
And so
after Noah built that ark and got out the ark, he drank wine.
He grew them grapes.
Yeah.
And so it's durable in the sense that man is always, wine is given for man to cheer his heart. We have the wine in the Lord's table. It's a perennial gift that God has given us. It's also fire, right? It's also got danger involved, but it's not a sin for Christians to be involved in trades which involve the production of alcohol.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's some really creative things. If you actually get down to it, it's the amazing thing about the world that God's made. I've worked at Tap for 2 years, so I got some sort of basic beer knowledge. The variety of drinks, even within one subcategory of alcohol, like beer or wine, which seems so simple, is absolutely astonishing.
Yeah.
There's so many different flavors.
What are they called who really know their beer?
They're Cicerones. So there's the sommelier, which is
The wine.
That's the wine. And then you've got Cicerone, which has a couple different tiers. I'm a Cicerone beer server.
Okay.
I'm not an actual Cicerone.
Okay.
That's level two. But I did take the $60 test or whatever.
Okay.
So, but it's amazing. Like with the ground, literally the things you got from the ground, mix them together, you heat them, you let them ferment, and they get all these different flavors.
Yeah.
It's really, really something. Anyway, I could talk about beer a lot because I work at places that had good beer, but...
Yeah, and if you want to go into this trade, there are extremely high barriers to entry. You need skill, so you need to know what you're doing. You need the investment capital, you need a building, you need barley, you need licenses, which often can be cost prohibited. I really like the story of the brewmaster guy in here. I thought he had some really fire quotes. One of them is that, so here's this guy. He learned from the masters in Germany and then started his own. And he got feedback from these online forums, which kind of turned these critics into creators. So, you know, critics who just want to spend their time ripping different breweries. He's like, well, I'm going to actually try to put them to work, help me make a good one. And they went from 7 barrels every other week to 120 barrels a week within 8 months, which is like insane. And he says this, it took me 16 years to become an overnight success. I thought, wow, that is often how genius, how success happens. What looks to us like, wow, they made it, or wow, they're sudden, like, but you didn't see, because you didn't know about all the years of failure, all the years of study, all the years of working hard. And I think this is one of those just gospel principles of there's suffering before glory, there's cross before crown, but it's slow in coming, and then when it suddenly does, you know, the fire hits the altar and God burns it up. It's a really, really cool thing. And so I say that to encourage someone who may not be experience that immediate high of success where you're cranking out all these barrels.
I was going to be mean to one of our local breweries, but I won't.
Yeah, don't.
Support local.
So thinking, it often takes generations to get here. One of the other things that I really like is this German word, Schlimmbesserung. I don't know actually how to pronounce this. Schlimmbesserung, which means negative improvement. And this is a principle we need to bring back, because negative improvement, or Schlimmbesserung, is the point at which anything you do to the thing is only going to make it worse. So, you know, you have your dish, and if you just add one more spice, you're going to ruin it. So, so once it's reached that perfection point, which in things like food or music or beer, things that have relative subjectivity to us, it's hard for us to know when that point is. But I think just knowing that that is a point at which any further work on it will only make it worse, man, it's like the woman who puts too much makeup on.
And you're like, oh, you were...
like, just restraint.
Self-control. Yeah. No, that's really good. Just a quick word on your principle, because it just kicks me back a little bit to Dave Ramsey, and you're thinking about the never gonna get Dave out of my head. He's gonna be haunting me till I die. But as you think about investments that you make into say your Roth IRA, things that seem so trivial, and things which, you know, the market returns are not gonna be 10% every year. Maybe they'll be 10%, you know, over the course of maybe 50 years, but not every year. So it can seem so trivial, and it can seem like, oh, you're not actually making much progress. But if you're steadily going, don't despise the day of small beginnings. Mm-hmm. What you see is a, what's that, quadratic?
Yeah.
The growth curve, which comes out of nowhere, right? Yeah. And all it takes is you have to reach a critical mass of faithfulness, of smallness, and then boom.
Yep.
So don't give up.
Yeah.
Beer brewers, start in your basement though. Start in your basement.
Lastly, we have the innkeeper, and I think the other name, hotelier.
Wow.
So this is someone who is putting people up, either in their own home or in a place outside. So this is one of the most family-centered things, because their kids are in the home. They can do chores. They can clean. And this has been popularized by things like Airbnb, VRBO, which has kind of democratized the lodging industry. And when I had the choice for my honeymoon, when I had the choice, we were going to Hawaii between all the many hotels or Airbnb. This was right actually when they outlawed certain kinds of Airbnb. So I think you have to stay for like at least over a month now for Airbnb to be legal, which is really stupid. It's kind of like cities kicking Uber out to protect the taxis. So because tourism, these hotels have an interest in it, and as soon as all these people open up their houses for it, you're playing with people's money, so they don't like that.
Don't touch.
But for us, we went and stayed at an Airbnb that was nicer and cheaper than a hotel would have been. And that this is a lot of people we know in our community do this. My mother-in-law boards NSA students, and so this is probably the easiest way, if you have the space in your house, to suddenly turn your house, as C.R. Wiley points, from just property to actually productive property.
One of the I can't help but get this image out of my mind, but I just hear innkeeper and I think prancing pony.
Yeah,
right. I think of Lord of the Rings. Because at the same time, while the trade has endured, I feel like we've kind of lost a little bit that common life.
Yeah.
Right, where you go into an inn and you've got the bard in the corner, or the fireplace, or the little tavern.
Yeah.
Where it is kind of run by family. Now we have executive hotels, the Marriott suites, and
you want privacy. You like don't want to.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't want your business known. Well, I mean, and if you get into Lord of the Rings, of course, Strider, he's going to find out your business.
Yeah.
But it's not a right or wrong either way, but it was fascinating thinking about like how different our environment is. And it'd be interesting, I don't know how well it would do to have that old-timey inn feel. I don't know if that would be a profitable venue, but I think I think of those places, they still exist, especially in England.
Yeah, and there's certain people that do want that. They do want to travel and talk to a real person and get to know them. And you have a variety of different Airbnb hosts. Some are more involved where you actually like to see them. You may maybe even eat with them, and some you won't.
Yeah.
Well, that's the innkeeper, and we've made it through the first 10 trades of durable trades. Jacob, what should people do this week?
Well, Aaron, whatever people do this week, they need to get that wisdom. They need to build that house. They need to rule that big fat belly. They need to stack dollars for the grandbabies.
For the grandberries.
Is it grandberries?